what are the three immediate things that we can do so that we can start turning the wheels?
Yeah. No, first, I totally agree with you. I mean, there's lots of things that the mayor can't do. And actually, a lot of the issues that we're facing in London, as you say, it's cultural, it's political, but it's there's loads of issues that need sorting in all sorts of ways that, you know, I think is going to take decades to solve. So one of our main things that we want to do for London is to totally defund the woke diversity industry across the whole of London. Most of it just annoys people, and it actually doesn't solve any of the problems it's trying to solve. So and stop dividing people by race and sexuality and identity, and just try to bring people together and keep spaces neutral. We want things like fireworks and transport and events to be neutral and for everyone, not to be for certain groups or certain political agendas. So that's one of our main policies. The second one that we want to focus on is kind of transport. So ULEZ has been a big issue facing London. I guess people feel that there's been like a war on cars in the last several years. For most people, I think cars represent independence and freedom. So it's not surprising that they're being attacked. Rationale for ULEZ is that it is environmental. It cleans the air. The air in London's pretty clean already. It's been increasingly clean for over decades now. And a lot of evidence suggests that ULEZ, especially expanding ULEZ into the suburbs, that the effects will be negligible anyway. It taxes some of the poorest people, people who can't afford to update their cars, people who have to travel, you know, for work, labourers, so on. And in terms of transport as well, I think lots of people feel that public transport in London's become more and more antisocial. The standards have just slipped on public transport. I mean, there's lots of strikes. Often trains don't run on time. Just transport is a lot less reliable than it used to be. And the kind of the transport staff that you see don't really do anything when they see antisocial behaviour, when they see people pushing past the ticket barriers or playing loud speakers or doing graffiti. It's all just allowed. So we really want to clamp down on that. We want to try a kind of zero tolerance approach to crime and antisocial behaviour just generally across London, because there's been an extreme increase in crime in London in terms of sexual assault, in terms of knife crime, and then petty crime, theft and so on. It's really increased under Sadiq Khan. So we want to increase stop and search powers, want to remove any kind of political correctness within the police. We don't want them to be stifled by worrying about targeting certain people. We want them to just target criminals, regardless of who they are. We want to kind of try out something that was done by the mayor of New York, kind of what's called a kind of broken windows approach, in that you target small crime, small antisocial behaviour. The higher stuff, the more serious crimes, will also reduce.
Hi there, everyone. Welcome to the World of Moments podcast. And in today's segment of Reflections and Reactions, we have Amy Gallagher with us. Amy Gallagher is by trade a psychiatric nurse and a psychotherapist. And she is also the founder of Stand Up to Woke. She's the writer and presenter of Madness and the War on Reality, a documentary, which was produced by the New Culture Forum, where she appears as well on New Culture Forum's Newspeak podcast. And she is also currently involved in a litigation against Tavistock after being suspended from her studies. So that is still ongoing. Is that right to say that is still ongoing, or is that been resolved?
No, it's still very much ongoing.
And on top of it, she is the mayoral candidate for London. So yeah. Finally, we have a candidate who I can support, even though I can't vote because I don't live in London, but at least I can support.
Yeah.
How are you, Amy?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm okay. Quite busy at the moment. And as you said, I'm doing this mayoral candidacy. So I'm kind of focusing on that all the way up till 2nd of May, which is the vote. So that's what I'm focused on at the moment.
Yeah. And that's what we're actually going to talk about today. So we'll start off with that. What do you think are the three main priorities not to fix London, because the problem is, like, you know, that's a pretty cliche sort of question. How do we fix London? Well, it got screwed over a very long time, and it's going to take a very long time to unscrew it, right? So, but what are the three immediate things that we can do so that we can start turning the wheels?
Yeah. No, first, I totally agree with you. I mean, there's lots of things that the mayor can't do. And actually, a lot of the issues that we're facing in London, as you say, it's cultural, it's political, but there's loads of issues that need sorting in all sorts of ways that, you know, I think is going to take decades to solve. So from the point of view of so I'm with the Social Democratic Party.
Oh, yeah, I should have mentioned that.
No, that's okay.
I'm a member of the party, so I should be mentioning that.
Oh, you should mention it. You should definitely mention it. So one of our main things that we want to do for London is to totally defund the woke diversity industry across the whole of London. It's totally, so much money is being spent on woke policies in the police, within transport, by Sadiq Khan. Most of it just annoys people, and it actually doesn't solve any of the problems it's trying to solve. So first thing would be to just get rid of all of that and save lots of money. And stop dividing people by race and sexuality and identity, and just try to bring people together and keep spaces neutral. We want things like fireworks and transport and events to be neutral and for everyone, not to be for certain groups or certain political agendas. So that's one of our main policies. The second one that we want to focus on is kind of transport. So ULEZ has been a big issue facing London, inner London and outer London. I guess people feel that there's been like a war on cars in the last several years. For most people, I think cars represent independence and freedom. So it's not surprising that they're being attacked by certain people. We want to completely stop ULEZ. I mean, the rationale for ULEZ is that it is environmental. It cleans the air. The air in London's pretty clean already. It's been increasingly clean for over decades now. And a lot of evidence suggests that ULEZ, especially expanding ULEZ into the suburbs, won't the effects will be negligible anyway. Hundreds of millions of pounds have been spent on ULEZ. It taxes some of the poorest people, people who can't afford to update their cars, people who have to travel, you know, for work, you know, labourers, so on. So we want to scrap all of that. And in terms of transport as well, I think lots of people feel that public transport in London's become more and more antisocial. More and more, the standards have just slipped on public transport. But a lot of people feel that, I mean, a lot of people find that, I mean, there's lots of strikes. Often trains don't run on time. Just transport is a lot less reliable than it used to be. And the kind of the transport staff that you see don't really do anything when they see antisocial behaviour, when they see people pushing past the ticket barriers or playing loudspeakers or doing graffiti. It's all just allowed. So we really want to clamp down on that. We have a kind of general zero tolerance. We want to try a kind of zero tolerance approach to crime and antisocial behaviour just generally across London, because there's been an extreme increase in crime in London in terms of sexual assault, in terms of knife crime, and then petty crime, theft and so on. It's really increased under Sadiq Khan. So we want to increase stop and search powers, want to remove any kind of political correctness within the police. We don't want them to be stifled by worrying about targeting certain people. We want them to just target criminals, regardless of, you know, who they are. So we want to increase stop and search powers. We want to kind of try out something that was done by the mayor of New York, kind of what's called a kind of broken windows approach, in that you target small crime, small antisocial behaviour. That's why it's called broken windows, like targeting a broken window or graffiti or so on. If you have a zero tolerance approach to those things, the higher stuff, the more serious crimes, will also reduce. So we want to kind of just essentially tighten up the police force in London and not allow any crime, even small crimes, to go unchecked. And then what happens then is that there's a kind of an atmosphere of people realizing that they can't get away with small things, and then they won't do bigger things. Wow. I mean, in terms of knife crime, we do have to sort of say essentially that it's a very, very difficult problem to solve.
Mm.
A lot of it is to do with fatherlessness, family breakdown, drugs, alcohol, all sorts of things. So it's a very, very difficult thing to tackle. But what we do see is that there's a lot of money within the Met police force in London that is just totally being wasted on training courses that are not needed. We want to cut back on all of that. And also what we've seen in the last 6 months is kind of the police becoming more and more, would you say, that they favour certain groups over others? A lot of people feel that there's two-tier policing within the
police. They're becoming political.
They're becoming extremely political. I mean, that's been happening over a number of years, mm-hmm. but I think we've seen it most sharply in the last 6 months. And what that does is two things, really. I think people feel that they don't take the police seriously anymore. They don't think they can rely on them because they're not fair. And what happens is that lawlessness goes unchecked. So we've seen quite like extreme things being said in the last 6 months in terms of these pro-Palestinian marches. Mm. And we see how the policing of that is very different to the policing of other protests. We don't want police to be doing things like taking the knee. We don't want police to be getting involved and celebrating some protests and not others, because then people just don't see the police as a serious kind of neutral organisation that's for everyone. So we'd quite like to bring back neutrality to the police and potentially make sure that they have training in neutrality.
To pick up on the thread of all those things, at the top of the issue for all of them is, if you want to change that, can you change that with the current leadership that is already there with all those different departments? Or is there a sense of, well, we will need fresh blood in that sense, because the people who have been being divisive, like in the police or in the other sectors, people who have been, not just people who are making the decisions, like the chief of police and stuff, like Met Police or stuff, but people who have been making policies and which policies that are being influenced, inclusion of DEI and stuff like that. Is there a sense that whatever the mayor of London have power of, that you could use that to replace those people?
So the mayor of London really has kind of power and authority over two things, really. That's the police and transport. But obviously the mayor's a sort of figurehead, and you know, we see that Sadiq Khan comments on lots of different issues on Twitter, and often in a, I would say, in an unhelpful way, you know, tweeting out trans women and women and all sorts of things. So the mayor does kind of represent London in that sense. But in terms of the mayoral budget, which is very, very large, like billions of pounds, that's going on police and transport fundamentally. And what we're seeing is, a lot of these kind of diversity, quotas and DEI and all of that stuff is being pushed heavily by Sadiq Khan. And of course, you know, with these things, if you take these things out, of course, you need a big cultural change. Like, as you say, the personnel will still have the ideas that they've been taught for, you know, the last 5 or 10 years, even if you take the training away now, which is why we would want to start new training around neutrality and not being political. So, and obviously that take years to kind of sleep down.
Like, you don't just want to remove something, you want to replace it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we ought to try to undo the damage as much as possible.
Well, when it comes to DEI stuff, what influence does the mayor of London have on the local authorities within London? Because a lot of the DEI stuff is sort of like coming from the government itself, and it is being adopted through different agencies within local government or within NHS, let's say, and stuff. Like, even if we pick up social services, it's going to come from Social Work England. How much, I'm guessing the Mayor of London would not have too much influence on that to ask them to not have those groups within local authorities and stuff. But what is the influence that Mayor of London can have?
Yeah, that's true. So obviously with local councils, the mayor doesn't have direct, you know, power over the local councils. But of course, the mayor is kind of, you know, like I said, a figurehead. So what they say has influence. So you can put pressure on, you can put sort of cultural pressure on these on what's happening in local council. So you can highlight issues, and so you can kind of push back against a kind of an agenda in that sort, in that sense. So yeah, the it's true that the power of the mayor is limited in that sense, but you'd be surprised by how much I think it's twofold, is it? It's politics and culture. I think those are the two things that we're trying to change. And changing politics, I mean, this doesn't necessarily change the culture, but it can have an impact. So I guess that's where you'd be looking for ways in which you can highlight certain issues and push back.
I mean, let's say, you know, how the mayor of London have these stupid adverts and stuff and whatnot, trying to promote, you know, like the Mate campaign, like spending ridiculous amount of money on stupid things like that.
Yeah.
So that, but that does have impact, that does have influence if it's used in the right way. Because Mate was too comical, it had the impact of people ridiculing and seeing for who this person actually is, like without substance, right?
Yeah.
So is there a sense of when you become the mayor of London, that you will continue doing, in a way, not yourself maybe, but influencing documentaries like the ones that you have done yourself, that can come from the office of the mayoral office, so that it has that influence and it does put pressure on other services and stuff, where the public gets more informed because they have these coming from a sense of authority, and the public then puts pressure on the services that no, we do not want these things, we do not want this information, we do not want the this talk of pronouns being enforced on our kids in children's services, or the gender breadman being enforced on through children's services into schools and stuff. You know, is that a plan?
Yeah, exactly. So when we first started looking at this mayoral candidacy within the SDP, one idea we sort of toyed with was just abolishing the mayor, because we were like, so much money has been spent on the mayoral budget, and wouldn't it be better to just sort of give that some, find a way that we could just give that back to people, or at least have a referendum on whether or not we should have a mayor? Because, you know, we were just thinking about how people are just sick of politicians, and wouldn't it be better for people to just have money in their back pocket? But I guess one thing we thought of is that actually at the moment, given all the turbulence we're experiencing culturally and politically, people really do need an authority. They do need a leader. They do need someone that will say things that need to be said. But the point is, we've just got rubbish leaders at the moment. So we need people that can come in and push back against this stuff. So that was kind of our thinking, that actually we do want a mayor, but we want a mayor that says the things that need to be said rather than the sort of things that Sadiq Khan says. So, you know, like you said, with that Mate campaign, which was totally, you know, ridiculed across the internet, and it was utterly stupid. It didn't even make any sense. You know, you could do things potentially like that, but that were really positive and promoted neutrality and promoted treating people as individuals, you know, so something that could be really positive and bring people together, and then try to change the culture that way.
But is there could we make a committee, a communication committee, or if there is, I don't want to create committees, like, you know, it's everyone creates committee, but something, a body that checks the messaging of what the mayor is saying before approval. So the mayor being sort of held accountable, even though the mayor can overrule and go ahead with it, but that's minuted and that's noted so that people can see, okay, you know, this committee or whatever, this body of people who are working within your office did not approve this communication for this and this reason because it was not neutral, sort of, you know, just to check that, because that should be done. Every public institution in our country needs to be neutral. It's one of the main thing about it. So I don't understand how he's bypassing it, probably because nobody's challenging it.
Yeah, I mean, he's held to account in the General London Assembly, so that's kind of a committee. Susan Hall, who's running for the Conservative, is on, and we're hoping the SDP, obviously we're a small party, but we'd like to get some SDP members on the General Assembly. But that's still just holding him to account for things that he's done, whereas, as you say, having something in place that can prevent him from doing something that could be divisive or could be an extraordinary waste of money or could make a problem worse. I think that would be really beneficial. I think that's a really good idea. I'd have to think a bit more about how you would do that, but I think it could be very useful, but you'd have to be done in a way that
it can stop you as well from, exactly. Which is good.
Yeah.
That it can keep you in check as well, just in case if you're not being too biased so on and on. But can the Mayor of London give more power to the London Assembly, or is it just upon the Mayor of London to actually listen to their advice? Because he just ignores it. He just ignores the Assembly and just goes on, and he just like shuts everyone down in the Assembly and just goes on and does whatever he wants.
Yeah, it's definitely a theme. I've been speaking to lots of people over the last several months that basically they reach out to Sadiq Khan and he shuts them down. So people within housing who want to solve the housing crisis, people within the police that have real concerns, real experts, that they, the mayor has the power to convene. In other words, if he asks somebody for their advice, he could reach out to the most significant people in London, and that he can get their advice. And often actually they're approaching him. And what I've been told by various people is that he ignores them or he shuts them down. And we see that in the general London Assembly. I just find Sadiq Khan to be just a very arrogant person who just doesn't want to listen. In terms of making those kind of significant changes to the process, that would have to be done, I guess, via some kind of referendum, I guess, or some kind of democratic vote in some way. But we'd be open to thinking about all those sorts of things. And it's one of our policies that we would have a potentially have a referendum on some of these things, whether we should have a mayor or not.
No, that's sort of good. What do you think about the recent sort of communication by the government, the Labour Party, although you could be, forgiven for mistaking them. About how they got the Labour Party talking about how they're going to help the ethnic minority businesses because somehow, for some reason, they need more help or stuff like that.
Yeah.
What is the point of these things?
I don't know. And I find it to be very, all of these sort of ideas are very generalizing and I would argue quite racist. To me, if you want to help small businesses, there's ways that you can help small businesses or people that are struggling, and you can look at business rates and so on and things that could help struggling businesses to get on track. But this idea that it's particularly black or Asian minority, to me the issue is people who are poverty or being able to socioeconomic status. And how do we help those people? And those people might be black or Asian or white. But to target a particular racial group, to me, would seem to be making a presumption about their socioeconomic status because they're...
But also, in this environment where already, people are dividing on racial grounds so much. But we have underlying issues with race. When it comes to small businesses, especially when it comes to Asian small businesses, I shouldn't say Asian, South Asian, mostly Pakistani businesses who are running drug rings, right, through their small businesses and stuff. So this sort of messaging gives a cover to them. It's like, oh, they're struggling businesses. No, they're creating some of, not all of them, they're creating struggling businesses, but they're still keeping up because they're running drugs. Right. So now if anyone wants to look into that, if Labour comes in with that mindset and anyone wants to look into that, investigate and stuff, they'll be stopped by saying, oh, you're harming the ethnic minority businesses. This is the problem that creates.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's what we mean by we want the police to be free from political correctness. We want them to be able to freed up to make as many decisions as possible.
Is the Met Police too big?
Is it too big? I don't know that it's too big. I think it's very corrupt, and I think that it's got lots of issues in relation to all of the things that you're talking about. I don't know that it's necessarily
corrupt by ideology, right? Not corrupt by, as in, people taking bribes and stuff like that, but corrupted by ideology. So
yeah.
how is it the matter of just changing the chief of police, or is it a matter of changing the chief of police and changing some of his decision-making board or whatever they are? I don't know how police works, as you can know. But also targeting the training, where the training of the police is happening, and taking out those training programs that you're not going to do this training.
Yeah, definitely. I think both of those things. So when you see breaches of neutrality, or you see two-tier policing, what we see is that nothing happens. No one's held to account. You know, none of the leadership within the Met is coming out and saying that's appalling, that shouldn't have happened. You know, nobody's coming out and saying this should be changed, this is a real issue. So we would be saying to, you know, we would be looking to the police to pick this up and saying, actually, you know, if you don't pick up on these issues, you know, this can affect your ability to police and to continue in your job. There's just an issue in London generally that people aren't being held to account.
Yeah.
So you see you see this in public transport as well. Like, I know it's a trivial thing, but we saw it was a while ago, but there was a quote, an Islamic quote that was put on the kind of display of King's Station. Which is totally inappropriate. And, you know, it was taken down, but we don't know that anybody was held to account. So there's no sense that, oh, you know, you can't do that going forward. You know, essentially it's giving the okay to all of these things. So
it's not just put up over there. That hadith was not just put up over there. Somebody made that decision.
Yeah. Yes.
To do that, right? But we are not being held accountable. It's just like local authorities. People make these things and they try to push it a bit too far. People don't like it. They just fall back, but nobody is held accountable.
Yes.
And I think so. We are at a point where people need to see people being held accountable so that it can deter this behavior.
Exactly. So it would be part of, you know, policy within public transport that you cannot do something like that. And then if somebody was to do that, then it would affect, you know, they would be, you know, reprimanded or sacked, you know, and you would see that happening. We'd be told that the person that did that, you know, has been removed or what they've been or whatever. But at the moment, there's just a kind of a feeling that anybody, you know, anybody can do anything really. And, you know, you sort of feel like, well, what, I see people, like I said, not buying tickets on the tube or pushing through the barriers, and I see staff seeing them do it, and the staff don't do anything. So you do start to think, well, why is anybody bothering to, you know, be?
That's not that development of staff not caring is actually a newer thing.
Yeah.
I came to England in 2010, like 14 years ago, and I came into London, and I left London after 8 months, but I came. Because of what London was. But there was a sense, like, because there was a lot of Asian people around me who were just jumping tickets all the time, and, you know, they were going close to the other person so they can push in, and that's how they were doing. One person would buy the ticket and 3 person would get on the Oyster card and stuff. But there was a sense, like, if we get caught, like, there would be trouble. And I, like, this is the reason why I started disassociating with them as well. I was like, you know, I don't want to do that. Like, I've never been in favor of doing any sort of petty crimes. This is a crime. Like, you are doing a crime. I don't care if the tickets are high or not, then don't go. But this development of the transport police or the transport staff just not caring is kind of new, and it seems like it's a wing of problem of recruitment. Because what I see is, like, throughout local authorities, obviously you can't influence in that way, NHS you can't influence in that way, being a London mayor, but within police and transport you can, because the recruitment, as far as I see, is people hiring like-minded people only with a certain kind of political bend.
Yeah.
Right. And they're getting them in. And over time, they've got so many of them in, even though there are actually a minority, these kind of people. But they're filtering into the public services so much That's why you see these messages come up or being approved, you know, and people not caring, because it feels like they want the system to go down. They want that chaos.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, but I think it's also interesting that, you know, in the during the pandemic, you saw staff being extremely vigilant around mask wearing and, you know, not getting too close to people and all of that stuff, because there was this massive kind of public health campaign putting pressure on people to act in a certain way. And you were told, you know, if you didn't wear a mask, you could be arrested, and you, you had to explain why you weren't wearing a mask and all of that sort of thing. And it was, you know, really, and it changed people's behavior, you know, within the matter of a few days. Right? So that really shows you how, if you have something that is, you know, heavily pushed in terms of a campaign, and where there are rules that are being enforced, you know, via the public transport staff and then the police, then you really can change things very, very quickly. Unfortunately, like I didn't agree with the way that that was being policed. I thought
that's a very important point, actually, because they can still do it if the messaging is something that they politically agree with.
Right? Yes.
So the lockdowns is something that they agreed with because it fits into their commie mindset, and they were like, let's do that, right?
Yes.
So if we are going to crack down on supporters of Israel, let's do that, right?
Yeah.
But Free Palestine, oh, is their culture, right? Because they don't support it. This is the political problem within the kind of people being recruited, and also people who are irresponsible, not holding the decision makers, not holding people responsible for their for not exhibiting impartiality.
Yeah, exactly. Like I'd like to see transport staff be as strong and exercised about antisocial behavior and, you know, people pushing through the barriers and people breaking the law as they were about people not wearing masks. You know, to me, like actual, you know, actual crimes, there should be a sort of a culture that someone will pick you up on it if you do it. But as you say, what's happening is it's, you know, going along with the fashion of the day, basically, whether it's Black Lives Matter or if it's, you know, pro-Palestine or whatever, that those things are seen as legitimate. And any antisocial behaviour that happens under that banner is completely acceptable. Whereas the issue should just be targeting the behaviour, regardless of what that's being done under, essentially.
So I mean, it's very it's good that you're a mental health nurse, right? because London needs a lot of help with that.
That is bad.
What, from that perspective, what are the things that, apart from messaging, what is the actual things that can be done to kind of help people as well? Because the same problem is with the trans problem, right? Is that what we have started doing is, if somebody has a mental health problem, rather than getting them to admit that they have a problem and start working through the process of overcoming that problem, what we have become is like, we accept you for who you are, and we are encouraging that person to indulge more in their problems. So that's not really helping. What are the some things that can be done to get people out of their various mental health issues?
Do you mean in London or just generally?
In London, but in generally as well, because, yeah.
I think what we have is a kind of a vicious cycle where, you know, you can go off sick for mental health problem, like long-term sick, and then you know, people can go on benefits for very long term, and that actually makes their mental health worse often.
Mm.
You know, work and going out into the public arena and getting dressed and going out and doing something and participating in society is what distracts you from any, you know, thoughts. It's what gives you a sense of self. It's what gives you a kind of sense of purpose. And, you know, you focus on things other than yourself, essentially. You're not ruminating and thinking all sorts of things. So I think we need to factor that in. You know, it's now seen as, you know, if you're struggling mentally, the first thing is to, you know, self-care and to sort of retreat into yourself, to not do well. Obviously, you know, if you're having a kind of schizophrenic breakdown, you're unable to go into work. Yeah. Obviously, at the extreme end, but what we're seeing is a lot of it's to, you know, smaller, when people just start to struggle in what I would say is an ordinary way.
Mm. Mm.
Where, okay, you might want to take 1 or 2 days off sick, but actually, you know, getting a diagnosis of anxiety or depression and then going off sick for months and months and months and retreating more and more into yourself and losing contact with society is not good. Mm. So we need to be encouraging people to, you know, look outwardly rather than inwardly. Our society is very introspective. It's very sort of, you know, think about yourself, think about your needs and you. And actually, I find, and I see it in all the people that I've treated, actually, when you turn the attention away from yourself and help other people or help society, that's when you start to feel better.
Yeah. Like
it's this constant introspection, I think, that we have in the West more generally, that is making people very unhappy. And I think there's all sorts of things alongside that. I think, you know, family breakdown and the loss of kind of...
Yeah, I mean, but anything adds on to it, right? Because I wrote something on my Substack that is going to go out later in the evening today. And it was around the anxiety and stuff, because I was saying I don't understand this fully, because I come from a background where stuff happens and you just have to deal with it and get on with it, right? So, you know, stuff has happened in my life. Like, you know, I've experienced war at the age of 4. I had to, you know, do so many things. So it's civil unrest. I have gone through that, living a religion that wants to kill me and still protesting against it, you know, and then so many other things have happened in my life. Like, you know, I went through the period where I wanted to commit suicide and stuff. You know, I've had friends who have died of suicide, whatever. I even got cancer 2 years ago, as if that wasn't enough, right?
Oh my God.
But it's just sort of like, I'm not claiming anxiety over it. Obviously, I would have stress. I would have anxiety. I would have flashbacks of things that have happened where, you know, times where I was kidnapped and beaten up and stuff like that. So that would come back to me. But the idea is to overcome it and not being paralyzed by it, right? Mm. If I overindulge in whatever has happened to me, then I'm just crippling myself. And I see people taking breaks, like you said, for anxiety. And I'm like, what anxiety? Life is anxious. Like, life gives you anxiety. Yeah. That's the whole point, you know? But I've seen people say, oh, I can't work full time. Healthy people, physically healthy, capable of doing anything people in their early 20s as well. Oh, I have anxiety. I can't work full time. So go on benefits. Now, those benefits are not free. They're coming from my pocket, right? And they're feeding you. Mm-hmm. And you have like experienced nothing in that any that sort of sense. And then also getting priority to get on the council housing, the same person. And then I see that person going on holidays, right? The holidays at that time along, this is like a long time ago. At that time when I could not afford certain holidays, that person going on holidays and stuff and enjoying themselves.
Mm.
It's like, well, so you make, A is like we overindulging in anxiety, and then some other people are just using it as a racket.
Yeah. Yeah. What we're doing is we're incentivizing people to have mental health problems. So there's lots of, there's financial incentives. As you say, you can go off and you can claim sickness benefit and so on. Then there's also a sort of cultural, social kind of incentive.
Where you put it on your profile and...
Yeah, you put it on your profile. It's a part of your identity. You get lots of love. You get lots of sympathy. You're seen as maybe kind of interesting, different. You get, is that you get a sort of positive affirmation for it. And also we have this kind of culture now of victimhood, that it's almost a crime to be the biggest victim. So you get kind of victim points, you know, you can claim to be part of the oppressed group rather than the oppressed. So you're sort of, it's a kind of virtue signal in that sense. So I'm not surprised that mental health rates are increasing. I mean, I don't think that necessarily it's that they're increasing, but people are making claims of depression and anxiety more than they used to. And yeah, I mean, I also think just kind of work that the kind of working from home thing and the pandemic did not help. I think that now people had that experience. We never really thought about the impact that that would have, but because people had that experience of working from home and not having to go out and not having to socialize, that there now a lot of people are claiming that they don't want to go into work. They want to stay at home, which we know isn't good for mental health. So there's all sorts of things in the mix at the moment when it comes to mental health. And, you know, I wouldn't want to sort of go too far in the extreme direction and say, you know, nobody should ever have any help. You know, of course,
yeah, obviously not. Yeah.
Yeah, of course, there's really serious mental health concerns.
But it's sort of like, why are you getting the help, or what am I doing when I'm not keeping you on these drugs. The idea is to get you healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen patients, you know, I've seen it a kind of shift, particularly young people that I've seen, in that when I do an assessment of them and I tell them that they don't have anything wrong with them, or in a sense, they don't meet the criteria for the diagnosis that they were expecting to get. Actually, they don't have an eating disorder. Actually, what they're experiencing is more mild and wouldn't reach that criteria. They're disappointed. They wanted it. And you just think, I'm telling you that you're healthy. I'm telling you that you don't have a problem. That should be good news. But they sort of feel like, oh, what did I need? You know, how do I get the diagnosis next time?
Yeah.
And you just think, what?
They want to have that. They want to have the diagnosis, or they're autistic, or they have ADHD, or whatever. So they can. People are using that as a replacement to actually have to work on their personalities as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's a void over there that they're trying to fill with adorations and, you know, acceptance from other people, rather than working on their, which is the blatant truth, like they have to work on their personalities. But in terms of real world physical things that can be done when you are the mayor of London. is there, because London is expensive, socializing in London is expensive, even beers are expensive, like, you know, it's just hard. Sorry. Living there and then working there and not seeing any part of your money and stuff. But like, there was an initiative like by Boris Johnson about his, like, those Boris bikes, whatever, that didn't really work. But is there an initiative that can be combined with the physical exercise and people having availability towards it, and not having to pay too much or not having to pay anything for basic necessity sort of physical exercise, where it's not just like a gym, but it's sort of like a socializing gym where people are coming together. And yeah, they are getting the counseling and stuff if they need that counseling, if they qualify for that counseling or whatever. But they are exercising, that group exercises that you can do, like, you know, exercise bikes or yoga or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just to get the idea that working towards your betterment is actually the cool thing to do or something.
Yeah. No, I think that's a brilliant idea. I mean, I always felt that during the pandemic, there should have been a campaign to get people exercising. You know, it would have helped with, you know, COVID, like getting healthy so that you can fight viruses, but mental health as well. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that exercise helps your mental health, not just your physical health. And, you know, getting going with exercising so that we can, it was overweight people largely, and people with underlying health that were a risk of the virus. So I would have loved to have seen, I still would love to see, and it's something I'd definitely consider doing if, you know, I was mayor, that, you know, having a campaign around a positive campaign to make positive behavioural changes. You know, all there's so much money that's wasted on so many stupid things by Sadiq Khan, that you could really reduce kind of gym membership rates, or you could have, you know, free gym membership for the poorest people or something like that. You know, you often see with in the area of mental health that people will go to the doctor and they're just given a pill, or they're just told to do this counseling, but it's not seen as a part of a broader behavioral change. That you can take an antidepressant. Antidepressants generally work by, if you if you're doing something that makes you happy, the antidepressant will keep the kind of happy feelings in your brain for longer. But you have to do something. You can't just stay at home. The antidepressant won't, you know, it's not just going to make you happy in your house. You've got to get out there and sort of stimulate your mind and get yourself going. So definitely, I think positive, you know, that's the sort of thing that I think money could be spent on, just not politics, not identity, but just evidence-based promotional health campaigns, and then genuine ways to help people to go to the gym or you know, meet with, you know, have a free session with a personal trainer or something like that, and to make it and you could even use technology, you know, I don't know.
Or like even walks, like group walks or stuff like that, or, you know, like a sort of like a group walk, like for a month, we're going to, you know, this is the group and we're going to walk this many steps every day or whatever, stuff like that. But the problem is, if someone like you doesn't do it, it's probably going to be, oh yeah, the black walk and the Asian walk and the, you know, the trans walk. That's the problem. So like, because the thing is, like, if it's just political messaging, people are just going to become more and more political minded in that sense, and not even knowing the underlying political narratives, or just following those threads. So it's good to do those things away from politics as well. Yeah. So that's a way of people from different politics to come together.
Exactly. You meet, if you go to places like gym, you're going to meet all sorts of different people, you know, because it's, you will meet people from different walks of life, different political views. So we're not, I find that what Mayor Sadiq Khan is doing is he's ciphering people off into the group. So he's doing things like, he did an event kind of called Black on the Square, which was for essentially for black people to get together. And you think, but that's kind of racial segregation in a way. You know, why would you want to cipher that group off? Why wouldn't we want something? We could come together to celebrate, you know, different cultures, but you would want to include everyone of that. It seems very odd to me.
So it pushes people, doesn't it? Like, because it pushes people to extremes in that sense. Like, if a black person is saying they only feel they feel more comfortable around other black people, right? Then what is that stopping from a white person to say, well, I only feel comfortable around only white people, and to be honest, this is my country, so why don't you get out of my country, right? So we start getting those narratives then. If you justify one, then you can't deny the other.
Exactly, you get the identitarianism in the opposite direction. I think that happens, but also I don't think it's helpful to minority groups to do that, because if you know, there's only sort of 3 or 4% of the population that are black. So, you know, it's a fact of life that in most situations, you probably will be seeing white people, you know, and you may well be a minority in a lot of situations, which, you know, it may be difficult for you and it may feel strange. And I can understand, you know, why it would. But also that's the situation. You've got to get accustomed to that. And obviously, I'm not saying kind of accept, you should accept racism, but actually you should, you know, you need to understand that you are a minority. You know, it's not, and, you know, it's not necessarily, it's not racist to kind of be a minority. It's just the reality of the situation.
It's the reality that's going to happen. But it seems like what they're trying to push for is a Star Trek kind of world where they don't have to deal with this, because everyone is equitably divided into, oh, this 25% black, 25% Asian, 25% this, and like, you know, it's like, I'm sorry, it doesn't work like that. But that is a very communist mindset of, you know, doing this, and this is what I see, like, these messaging ways coming through is because most of the leadership within the public sectors, the leadership itself, are blatant Marxists, as they say all the time to their staff and stuff, you know. So obviously that's going to filter through, and I mean, and change, that's why I said, like, the some of the leadership will have to be changed.
I mean, you see it on advertisements on the tube. I mean, I don't watch television anymore, but I'm told that a lot of advertisement on TV is like this as well. There's an absolute over-representation of black and ethnic minorities. And what it does, I mean, of course, I have no problem with seeing black or Asian people, but when it's overrepresented in such an extraordinary way. It's essentially a lie. You know, it's a lie.
It's creating a narrative, yeah.
Yeah, you would look at the advertisements on the tube and think that maybe 50 or 60% of the population were Black or Asian.
Yeah.
So if you went then into a workplace or a space where that wasn't the case, you'd be annoyed. You'd be like,
oh, is my employer racist then? Because that's the thing, like, that is creating that narrative, and also creating that narrative that it's not okay to be white, or it's not okay to just have a white family, right?
Yeah.
That, oh no, you should have, like, why are you racist? You don't like Black people, like, you don't like brown people and stuff.
Mm.
It is creating that narrative, and it's very carefully orchestrated as well.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously this is why having, if we have someone like you in a position of major influence in the country, it helps to undo some of those messaging.
Yeah.
You know, I am in favor of getting rid of the Mayor of London Post.
Are you?
But at the same time, it's sort of like, well, we need a voice at this, you know, as well. So if we can get, like, the mayor of Manchester, if we can get someone competent over there as well, that's another voice that you can have. And, like, you know, you can have these voices different places. And also, I want London to stop encroaching on Essex, because the ULEZ is into Essex now.
It's near where I live. I live in Kent, and it's coming over to Kent. I've never seen anyone at any protest where I live as strong as the protest against ULEZ. People are so annoyed by it. More and more there's kind of infringements on our freedoms. Mm. It's just becoming more and more difficult to just go about your ordinary life without politics or interfering. I think most people just want to, you know,
get on
exactly. And I agree with you about Manchester as well. I met with Nick Buckley, who's an independent candidate, and he's brilliant.
Yeah,
I really wish that he got more attention. He's a very brilliant person who's thinking about.
And he has a lot of experience working with the homeless people, and he has really good ideas. I talked with him on my podcast as well. It just, I don't like, because he's so sensible. I think so. That's why people are just not.
Yeah.
You know, sensible people are not getting through.
I know, because you have to say outlandish things often to, get attention. I mean, that's
those highlight things that you have to just scream out.
Yeah.
But it was really nice having you over here. So you live in Kent. Going back to London?
Well, I do live in London. I live in, I live in South London. It's kind of between.
Yeah.
London and Kent, so it's
on the edge.
It's on the edge, but I am
like you said, like, you've always lived in London. You know, your family is from there and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so that's important as well, that you have a stake into, you know. I stopped going into London for a very long time. Like I said, when I came over to England, I only lived eight months. I didn't see England in London even at that time in 2010.
Mm.
And that's why I just left. Mm. And it's sad, because that's the capital of the country. And, you know, in the places where you can see England, in London, you can't afford to live in those places.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's like, you know, you have to. And then all you see is the people who are not English. And it's not as if just the aesthetics of it. It's that they don't behave as English or British as well.
Yeah.
And, that's why I would like London to be revived. I think so. The whole country would like it to be revived, because the whole country actually loves London. It's not as if they hate London, but because of this divisiveness and London taking everything away from people and messaging this out and becoming bigger than the Prime Minister himself, that's why people have started hating London. So I hope when you get in the position, you can help change that. And I hope everyone who's listening to go and vote for Amy Gallagher, standing for SDP for Mayor of London. And thank you so much.
Thank you.